Welcome to another edition of Inside Ivy Hoops. I'm your host, Mike Tony, editor of Ivy Hoops Online, and I'm very glad and grateful to be joined by IHO writer extraordinaire Richard Kent. Richard, how are you?
Good. How are you, Mike?
Excellent. Excellent. A lot of ground to cover, but we're going to try. No. We've got more important things to talk about. As our listeners may know and should know, Richard, your IHO's resident Yale beat writer, and therefore have had a lot of great wins to write about on both the men and women this season, including Ivy opening wins against Brown on both sides, and we'll get into those. First, though, I'll note that the Yale men took care of business in an 89-75 win over lowly Howard in Washington on Martin Luther King Junior Day, a year after Harvard beat Howard in D.C. on MLK Day. This time, Yale getting it done against a Howard squad coached by former Columbia and Harvard assistant Kenny Blakeney. But Richard, I wanted to start off by getting your thoughts on James Jones's squad looking poised to win a fourth Ivy title in six seasons. Yale's defense statistically off the charts right now in the best possible way. Talking about a top 30 defense nationally, third in the country in three-point percentage allowed. Yale held Brown to 0.78 points per possession and 56 points overall in an impressive win to hold serve against the Bears in New Haven Friday. How are the Bulldogs stifling opponents and winning games?
Well, I want to go back a second to August 11th, I believe. I was in JLA with James Jones, his elite summer basketball camp, and I told them that I was starting to do some writing about the upcoming season, and unlike a lot of other scribes who had picked Yale to finish either third or fourth in the IB, I was considering picking second. He looked at me like I was crazy. And he said to me, "We're going to finish first. We're going to win." And I said, "Okay, but what about Harvard?" He said, "I don't coach Harvard, I coach Yale. We're going to win it." And, I mean, it's not like he's a second-year coach. So when I was driving back from New Haven to Westport, I said to myself, maybe there's something to this. And I started analyzing and dissecting the lineup a bit more and then taking a closer look at the Ivy. And I came to the realization, at least in my mind, that day, in the dead of summer, Yale's three-headed monster, Swain, Bruner, and Atkinson, was, in my mind, even then, the best trio in the Ivy League.
Well, it's that premonition, if that's the right word, certainly has come to fruition. So Jordan Bruner, 23 points, 7 boards, 3 blocks in just 29 minutes against Brown. Which was led by Tamanang Cho to the tune of 18 points, 12 of which came from the free throw line. Jalen Gainey coming off the bench to pitch in 11 points and 8 boards, 4 offensive snares included in that in the front court. So, I mean, Yale clearly at the top of the league. James Jones' prediction looks very much on track to coming true. First things first, though, what do you plan to keep an eye on in the Yale-Brown rematch in Providence this Friday?
You know, it's an interesting series, and I've tracked it for many years. And there's actually a disproportionate amount of winners, visiting winners, in the series. And the series for many years went 1-1, sometimes with the home team. But I was at the Yale-Brown game. I just think Yale has just too much firepower for Brown. They just ran away with it in the second half. And it's so difficult to defend, especially with Jordan Bruner shooting threes with abandon and with accuracy from the perimeter.
There's a lot of firepower there for sure. It's not just defense. But so Yale has exceeded outside expectations with great aplomb. Brown, what's your take having seen the Bears' first attempt to knock off Yale? What is your take on where Brown stands at this point? Maybe not quite as much firepower as Yale. What do you think this Brown team is capable of?
I thought at that very time in mid-August that Brown was, at least in my mind, interchangeable with Princeton as the fourth and fifth best team in the Ivy. And I didn't know which team was going to emerge. And certainly Brown's first half against Yale and first half against Duke, actually not even first half against Duke, but first 28 minutes, I would say, against Duke, did nothing to change my mind. Mike Martin is an excellent coach. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about that. And they have talent. Cho is a terrific player, as we know. And they can, when they're hitting the three, which they can certainly do, I mean, without any doubt, if Hunziker is abandoned like he did against Rhode Island in that 13 or 14 point upset win, Brown can stay in the game with anybody.
Yeah, I was right there with you, Richard, as far as where Brown seemed to fall in the pecking order interchangeably with Princeton there right in the middle. Yeah, Brown can beat anybody, certainly in the Ivy League, on any given day if things are firing on all cylinders for them, even if they're not.
I mentioned two teams. I mean, I reviewed every Brown game, and I mentioned two games, though. I mean, beating Rhodey is no small feat. Certainly, Rhode Island is a tremendously athletic team and a very well-coached team by under David Cox. And I listened to Coach K's press conference after, I know it was a 75-50 loss, but as we often say, that score bore no relationship to the actual game, and he was tremendously.
Yeah, he was. And there was a lot to be complimentary of, not just post-game platitudes. So we'll see. We'll see what Brown ultimately posts this season. Of course, coming up just short of an Ivy League tournament berth a season ago. Could very well
turn out different. Yeah, I'm going to say right now, though, because I have seen Princeton, and I've spoken a lot to Brett McConnell, who I've known for years, who was dad from Rutgers. And I see Princeton right now, obviously, with 2-10, as perhaps being the number three team, and maybe Penn is the number four team.
Well,
I mean, let's look at it. That's a tough hole to get out of when you lose two games in early January, in the Penn, you're 0-2, and with Harvard and Yale being as strong as they are, you know, you can't really hope for much more than a split, 2-2, and probably 1-3 in those games. So now all of a sudden, you might have five losses, and you know there's going to be a loss somewhere else. Is it going to be at Brown? Who knows? But there's going to be a loss somewhere else. So, you know, Penn may have painted itself into an 8-6 corner with those two losses.
Well, unfortunately, Penn has had a lot of practice digging out of holes in Ivy play in recent seasons. Penn going to be looking, looking ahead a little bit in the schedule here, but they will be looking to avoid its fourth 0-3 start to Ivy play in five seasons under Steve Donahue, when Penn hosts Harvard, not this weekend, the weekend after.
We don't know a whole lot right now, or at least I don't, about Bryce Aiken, and you know whether or not he's going to be playing in that game. And you know, I think it's safe to say that as Bryce Aiken goes, especially without Seth Towns, so goes Harvard.
Yeah, that would seem to be a fair assessment, and yeah, has implications for how the top of the league looks, the upper echelon at the very least, how that looks as well.
Yeah, but let's get back to your original question. Your original question is Yale is firing on all cylinders, affirmative. Yale's playing great defense, affirmative. But you know what? They've played great defense since James Jones' first game that he coached at Yale. So that's no surprise to me. I mean, I didn't know James that well. I didn't know his team that well when they beat Rutgers in the NIT in the early, I think it was 01, 02. And I thought that Rutgers was a tremendously talented team. But it was his lockdown defense that kept Rutgers in the 60s. And he's continued that throughout his coaching career at Yale, which I think will ultimately land him as the winningest coach in Ivy League history.
Yeah, he's on track for sure, and you're right. The defense has always kind of been the through line.
Yeah, it's been his calling card, along with offensive rebound. And I've gone to enough Yale practices, you know, to hear him preach that, and you know, to watch his team perform at that level.
Yeah,
I mean, listen, this is a team that lost. I think. Valuable player on the Yale team last year was Alex Copeland. And this is a team that lost Alex Copeland. I mean, the guy could stop on a dime and hit the two-pointer. Mia Ioane obviously has had a cup of coffee with Utah in his, you know, back and forth with the G League. You lose Blake Reynolds, you lose Trey Mills, a lockdown defender. And that, you know, maybe I'm a little bit of a partisan, and that's why I had Yale at 2, and maybe that's why a lot of people had them at 4. But how do you come back from those losses, and perhaps, and I will quote one coach without naming the coach, be better than last year?
Well, that's a sign of a program that, you know, there is no rebuilding or even necessarily reloading. It's just full steam ahead.
And you know, in preparation for this call, I was looking just quickly, just to be sure I was correct. I think this team may even be stronger next year than this year. Obviously, they lose Bruner and they lose Eric Monroe. And Eric Monroe, I think, has been terrific, especially in looking for a shot when he has a shot, and also in rebounding. But I think on many levels that Matt Cotton is the future. And we're going to see Matt Cotton for 2 more years after this year.
Well, you know, one thing that I think is noteworthy about the way James Jones has run his program, and this is certainly not anything, not taking away from the remarkable accomplishments of both Tommy Amaker and Steve Donahue, who have, you know, a ton of Ivy League championships between them, obviously. But with James Jones's teams, you kind of always know what you're going to get. You know, Rob Brown and I have both talked about this on the podcast before. You know, everyone has their role. You know what you're getting. You know what the lineups are. The bench isn't necessarily a deep one. You know, he has his guys, and they just execute very, very well. Not a ton of lineup changes, not a whole lot of personnel carousel going on. You know what you're going to get, and you get it.
Let me interject this. I'm sitting there watching the Brown game, and all of a sudden I'm saying to myself, wait a minute, Wyatt Yes is playing a heck of a lot more minutes than I'm used to him playing, and even used to seeing him in practice with the first team. And he ends up, I believe, with 5 points and 5 rebounds, and I think played an invaluable role in that win. So, yes, I agree with you historically and precedentially about the lineup changes, but that was a little quirk, a little adjustment that I thought was extremely effective against Brown.
Oh, that's true. That's an excellent point. Actually, Wyatt, yes, got 14 minutes against Howard as well. So maybe a harbinger of more minutes to come. I guess we'll see. But yeah, whatever the adjustment that needs to be made, whether it's with Wyatt, yes, or really any other player on the roster, James Jones will make it if he feels he needs to. That is for sure. I did wanna get back to Penn and its mid-season slump, which worsened with a 87-81 loss against St. Joseph's at the Palestra, of course. Billy Lang gets his fourth win in 18 tries as the program continues to move on from Phil Martelli. A.J. Broder posted a season-high 33 points. But the Hawks, not a good shooting team, rocked Penn from long range, and the Red and Blues' three-point defense woes continued. Penn now 19th worst in the nation in that category, worst in the Ivy League. Not a great sign since the Ivy is such a three-point savvy league. Penn ranked second in the nation in three-point percentage during its 2018 Ivy title run, akin to where Yale stands now, really. But obviously no more Antonio Woods or Darnell Foreman guarding the perimeter, and they're greatly missed. In other Ivy opener action Saturday, Harvard with a 67-62 victory over Dartmouth, and a strong showing for the Chris's, senior Chris Lewis, first-year Chris Ledlam, each with 18 points, Christian Jizang with 11 points, 6 assists, and Columbia got a much-needed Ivy opening win over Cornell, first-year Jack Forrest registering a career-high 23 points against the Big Red, who did get the services of Jimmy Boeheim, who had been banged up. Richard, any thoughts on where any of those teams stand after their Ivy openers?
Well, I mean, Harvard, as I said before, I mean, it's very difficult to assess Harvard without Bryce Aiken. I mean, if Harvard is going to go the rest of the season without Bryce Aiken, I mean, I'm giving the Ivy title right now to Yale at probably 12-2. If Bryce Aiken is healthy, I mean, I could see perhaps those teams tying at 11-3, maybe Yale going 11-3, and Harvard going 10-4. But I think as Bryce Aiken goes, and I don't think there's a player and an injury more significant than his, Harvard goes. I mean, I don't see after the top five. I don't see much this year. I think for the top teams, especially the top three, I think they go 6-0 against the bottom three.
Yeah, it could be that kind of year where, you know, there's a clear stratification in the league. We'll see how it goes. But yeah, I mean, we'll have to see. There have been an awful lot of injuries in the league this year, and there really seem to be every year. But yeah, I mean, that's obviously the most consequential one, as you noted before. Just have to see how things play out. Flipping over to the women's side, Yale still victorious over Brown, although, as you wrote for the Say, Richard, it was a game ultimately decided by 7 points that didn't necessarily feel like it was. Brown cut the home team's lead to 3 with a minute to go after having trailed by 18 heading into the fourth quarter. Just couldn't.
I mean, I got to tell you, I'm at the game, and I was talking with Tom Beckett and the Brown athletic director, Jack Hayes, and Yale's up 14, 15, 16, 13, whatever. And the fourth quarter starts, and then I look up, and Yale's up by 6. And I'm saying to myself, what's going on in this game? And I didn't look that carefully, but I don't think Justine Gaziano scored until the fourth period. And I think she had
I think she had 12 in the fourth period. She would have had 48 in a game. They called that out. None of this. Just kept chucking up and making threes. And Allison Guth had to do everything she possibly could to win that game. But all that said, I've gone to many more Yale women's games than that game. And I don't feel any differently today than I did on September 1st, probably. I think Yale's the second best team in the Ivy League. I think this is the best Princeton team. And I think that Gary Walters, former AD at Princeton, probably agrees with me. I think Carla Berube is doing an incredible job. But notwithstanding, I could see a split with Yale. I think it's conceivable. I mean, I think Princeton goes 13-1 in the Ivy, and I could certainly see Yale going 11-3 or 12-2. I mean, this is a very, very talented team. Roxy is the glue of this team. Not the best player on the team. I'm supposed to be the best player on the team, but I mean, Roxy is just playing at such a steady, such a high level. And Ellen Margaret Andrews is very quietly, at least in my purview, averaging 15.6 points per game and 4.1 rebounds. And she may have hit more clutch shots than Roxy and Emspa.
Yeah, it's been great to see her back and playing at a really high level. Yale, the best start in program history. Yeah, I mean, that pecking order kind of makes sense. Yale hovering, you know, around the 11 win mark, if it continues to perform to this degree, this high level that it's playing at. We've talked about Penn, and we'll get to Penn in a little bit, but you know, Penn maybe not quite with the front court that it has had in past seasons. Alea Parker still a great player, but seems to be dogged by injury to at least some extent. And Penn going with a more guard-driven attack with Kayla Padilla, of course, looking like the obvious Rookie of the Year candidate. Did the Bears impress you by hanging tough late with Yale, Richard, after having been projected to finish last in the conference again?
Well, I mean, it's in Charles Dickens' living, which was the tale of two games. First three periods,
yeah,
and then the fourth period. So I think I may have missed half of the fourth period by talking to two people. So tell you, I mean, I think Yale's a far superior team to Brown. I think Brown got hot at the right time. I think they outscored Yale. It might have been 26-28-11 in the fourth period. But Yale hung on for the win. They impressed me in the fourth period. Of course, they impressed me. They played it probably their hot. I've only seen one other Brown women's game. But they probably played at as high a level in that fourth period as they did in any period throughout the season.
Well, when you make shots, anything can happen. The other winner that got to victory in a conference opener also, like Brown, got hot at the right time, but actually was able to push its way over the top. Columbia overcame a three-point deficit heading into the fourth quarter against Cornell, a 28-point final period in which the Lions hit five triples, got a 76-66 win. Sienna Durr and Abby Sue, each with 17 points for the Lions, 16 each for Samantha Widman and Shannon Mulroy to lead the visiting Big Red. It'll be interesting to see how that rematch goes. Now that the table's set, let's preview upcoming Ivy action, starting on the women's side with Penn taking on Temple. The Red and Blue looking to win their sixth game in their last eight meetings with the Owls. And with a win, Penn would win a share of its third Big Five title. And, of course, coming off a 70-58 loss to Villanova last Wednesday. Brown, of course, gets another shot at Yale, this time in Providence, Saturday at noon. Is there anything to add about the rematch, Richard? I mean, we're talking about a team in Yale, obviously more firepower. Brown having gotten hot late. Anything else that you're looking for?
Well, I would look for Brown to play a lot stronger in the first half in Providence than they did in New Haven. But, you know, once again, I think you used the keyword firepower. I think Yale is a tremendously talented team. I believe the best Yale women's team I've ever seen, and I've seen them for more than 20 years. And I can't perceive of either Brown team, men or women, winning on Friday or Saturday.
And Cornell will try to avenge its loss to Columbia by returning the favor up in Ithaca at 1 o'clock Saturday. Harvard looking for its own revenge, hosting Dartmouth an hour later. Big Green, of course, having eked out really a thrilling one-point win. Not thrilling if you're Harvard, but a thrilling one-point win nevertheless in Hanover against the Crimson. What would you say is the key to the Bulldogs switching over to the men's side now with Brown hosting Yale? What would you say is the key to the Bulldogs avoiding a letdown in Providence, Richard?
I don't know that there's a lot of letdowns with James Jones coaching teams, quite candidly. He's got him up for every game. And I think this is a team just watching them in practice that's on a mission. Didn't know that they were on a mission when they were on a mission when I first saw them practice in mid October, but I think that this team I think James likes being an underdog. I think he kind of relished being picked fourth by a couple of those Smith and you know, maybe Blue Ribbon, whatever it was, because he didn't say that. I'm sure that he told his team about that. So I don't think that Yale's gonna let down at all against Brown. Brown played a really strong first half against Yale. I think down by three, and I think that it was a rigorous halftime speech by James, and Yale came out on fire in the second. Yale has a lot of weapons. It's not like their offense derives from their defense. Yale is a strong offense. I mean, Atkinson at times can be unstoppable. I had a friend who hasn't seen Yale play this year, who was down in D.C. and went to the Howard game. And he texted me after like the first 10 minutes, and he said, "Is Atkinson ever going to miss?" And, you know, we last saw that at Yale with Brandon Sherrod, who, of course, I guess tied the NCAA record for consecutive shots made. I mean, I don't have Atkinson's percentage. I know at one point it was 78%.
Yeah, he doesn't miss that often. At least comparatively speaking, that's for sure. I don't know. Can Yale still play the underdog card? You think? I'm sure James Jones is playing it very well.
Team. I think he is. I think his team, and I think he himself probably got tired of hearing Harvard, and right now, I think other coaches are saying Yale.
Yeah, maybe the tables have turned in other locker rooms. But this was supposed to be Harvard's year with, possibility, at least on the outside, possibility of having Aikens and Aiken and Towns back and having the Ivy tournament at Leviades. Of course, the Ivy tournament is still at Leviades, so Harvard still has a bit of an advantage there. But Paul Atkinson.
I was plotting myself out.
I guess you remember, you probably remember the Penn State win over Yale. Yale led, I think, for, 39 minutes?
Yeah.
I think they had a 10-point lead with about a minute and 90 seconds to go or so. And I was taking a look at the NET today, and I really think that if Yale had won that game and had gone 12-2 or 13-1 in the Ivy, won the regular season, and I'm not saying it's going to happen because I still think Yale's going to win the Ivy tourney, but if Yale had lost to Harvard in a 5-point game or so in the Ivy tourney final, I think that Yale could have made a strong case for being the first Ivy men's team, to ever get an at-large bid.
Yeah, I mean, I still feel like they probably would have gotten snubbed through absolutely no fault of their own whatsoever. But I'm sure they would have had the numbers absolutely to make a slam dunk case. You know, they passed the eye test for what that's worth, and I do think the eye test still matters, maybe more than it should. But this is as things stand, it's certainly a NCAA tournament worthy team. I don't think there's any questioning that at this juncture. Yeah, Paul Atkinson has he makes a lot of shots. he's just under 63% from 2-point range this season. That's pretty good. Want to switch back over to Penn. They're going to be looking to break out of their doldrums against Temple at the Palestra Saturday at 2. Be interesting to see how that matchup goes for the first time against Aaron McKee, not Fran Dunphy. Before Cornell hosts Columbia at 4, Dartmouth welcomes Harvard at 7. KenPom actually gives Cornell a slight edge at home. No such analytical luck, if that's a thing, for Dartmouth. Richard, do you see either Cornell or Dartmouth successfully defending their home court Saturday?
I would not be stunned if Cornell beat Columbia. That would not stun me. And listen, Cornell's got to win at some point. So, and Brian Earle's a good coach. There's no doubt about that. So that would not be a surprise.
Yeah, that you're right. I mean, I don't see Cornell going 0-14. It's kind of you know, to even ponder that is just kind of absurd with a coach of Brian Earle's caliber. You know, hopefully Jimmy Boeheim is doing better, and that should be a good game no matter which way it shakes out. Of course, Columbia and Cornell have both struggled with closing out games, winning close games this season. Columbia desperately looking for a sweep against the Big Red. Anything else that you're looking forward to this weekend, Richard, on either the men's or women's side?
Well, I was thinking about it when we were going over the Yale men, and then quickly segued over to the Yale women. Sitting here in Connecticut, we hear a lot about John Toner having hired Jim Calhoun and Gino Auriemma, and you know, both of them obviously were brilliant hires. But I think it's Tom Beckett hiring Allison Guth and James Jones. And look where they are right now. I mean, when were we talking, you know, before James, about Yale being the power in the Ivy? I mean, not during the Butch Graves era. I mean, you got to go back to Rick Kaminsky. And then Rick Kaminsky ran into a double B by the name of Bill Bradley, and that was short-lived. So, I mean, I got to give tremendous credit to Beckett as an AD for hiring those two coaches. I mean, I think James is the best men's coach in the league, and I certainly think that Allison is top three.
Well, definitely James Jones. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of, on the men's side, you know, when you think about it, there's a lot of great coaches, and that, you know, kind of just doesn't sound, I don't know. It's not the most exciting analysis, but it's true. There are a lot of great coaches to enjoy on the men's side. I think what's interesting about the James Jones era is the fact that he has coached both the first part of his tenure. There was still something of a Ben Princeton duopoly of sorts that soon crumbled, and it looked like it was going to be a Harvard and Tommy Amaker reign after that, and, you know, making four straight NCAA tournaments. But you know, as the quality of the recruiting and the incoming talent has really soared over the last decade or so, James Jones and his staff have certainly been at the forefront of that. You know,
I mean, you use the word staff, and when you can keep and hang on to a Justin Simon and a Matt Kingsley, and you can bring in somebody of the quality and caliber of Toby Carberry, who's New Haven born and bred, I mean, that I think is the top staff in the Ivy League.
Yeah, I mean, and you look at, you know, and they're bringing in the talent. I mean, you know, Jordan Bruner could have went to Clemson, didn't. You touched on it earlier, you know, losing the talent that Yale lost last season, Mia Oney, Trey Fills, you know, the list goes on and on with the amount of talent, not just last season, but go back to the 2016 NCAA run. You know, when's the last time that James Jones didn't finish in the top of the league, top half of the league? You'd have to go back to his first season. I'm sure he wishes that there were Ivy League tournaments going back his entire tenure, because he would have crashed pretty much all of them.
A guy that I really like that hasn't seen a lot of minutes certainly of late, and even in the Howard game, although he got in early because it was a homecoming for him, is EJ Jarvis. EJ Jarvis, and we're not going to see it this year, but I've seen it in practice. I think we're going to see Jarvis really come into his own next year. And I've said before, and I've been giving it some thought, I think even with the losses of Monroe and Bruner, next year's team, with an even more seasoned, if possible, Paul Atkinson, and, you know, with a deadly 3-point shooter, they will go into the season. And Azra Swain, I'm sorry, they will go into the season, certainly rated by everybody as the preseason pick to win the Ivy.
Well, let's hope they can stay healthy. I mean, I don't want to jinx them. That always seems to dog the favorites at the top of the league. You know, just stay healthy and things should be good. Although, you know, Yale has had its share of success overcoming injuries as well. Certainly. Yeah, James Jones, Allison Guth, when you look at their programs, you know, the other Ivies have their eye on them, so we'll see how things play out, but both coaches will be looking to sweep Brown first things first.
Well, I will tell you this, and I don't even think this is a prediction at this point. Yale men and women will will be in Cambridge in March.
Yeah, I think that's a safe bet. Safe bet. I think it would be more challenging to ponder who will be joining them. And we'll see. We'll find out soon enough. Richard, Ken, thank you so much, as always, for coming on the show. Always appreciate getting your awesome insight into not just Yale, but all things Ivy round ball. Thank you so much.
Well, I appreciate it very much, and I look forward to being on again.
Likewise. Take care, Richard.
You take care as well.